The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.
All right, folks, welcome to The Muskie 360 Podcast. Chaz, we're finally going to deliver on our promise, aren't we?
You have to.
We're going to deliver.
I am absolutely fired up, man. So, we are coming in hard 4 year on the trolling tactics. And,
yep.
Man, let's get after it.
We're going to fire. And, guys, you can tell Chaz is actually on the move right now. He's in his truck, so I know he doesn't sound normal. But we promised to do this. We're super slammed this week. The only other housekeeping thing, Chaz, I want to tell is this, right?
Okay.
Here's the deal. I haven't even told you this yet. We have some Muskie 360 boat decals coming. So these are these are 4x4 decals. You can put it on your engine. You can put it on your boat. We'll have them for sale here really shortly on the app. And like I said, honest to God, folks, I'm going to put them up for really nothing. I want you guys to have these. But the first thing that we're going to do is I'm going to give away a set of these. Our contest for this week's podcast is going to be send us the fish that you caught this week. So that you once you listen to this podcast, starting on Thursday, when it comes out, send us that fish. Let's see what somebody sends in. It's not about the biggest fish or anything like that. Just send it in and say, hey, I want a decal from a boat. We'll send you a pair. You'll get two decals that you can put on the boat and rep the app there. We'll send those out to you. But anyway, we'll have those available. Chaz, I didn't even tell you. I'll mail you a set, Chaz. We'll talk about that later. Oh, yeah. You don't have to win. Yeah, Chaz's contest he had to win was far worse than anyone else's. It was a death. It's a death match like Star Trek style between you and Tyler for these boat decals. But anyway, so you guys can wrap the app. Just send us your picture and of a fish you've nailed out there here after this opening part of season. Anyway, we're gonna talk trolling. I promise you, folks. Number one, Chaz has not had any Pepsis because he's driving. Number two, we're not. He's having an actual Pepsi. Unless you hear if you hear the police sirens behind him, he may have had a couple real Pepsis. But what we want to do is we've had so many questions regarding trolling here at the app. We're just going to go through this. It might be a little bit drier than usual, but we want to help you guys get into trolling or dial your trolling in. So first up, and this is everybody that's asked a trolling question, I've just rolled it all into one big deal here. So first up, I'm going to ask Chaz. We're going to discuss this stuff. Number one, let's talk trolling gear. First up, rods, Chaz. What is your go-to setup for rods? Are you using your casting rods, or do you have trolling rods, or what sort of your thoughts there, my man?
I've got both. I would say, surprisingly, for musky trolling, I primarily use the same rod that I use for casting, with a little bit of tweaking to them. Of course, we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But I really, my preferred trolling rod, generally in the fall, is an 8'6" medium heavy power Legend Turn St. Croix. I troll a lot with the Premiers. I've trolled with my Legend Elite. So that sometimes for me personally, when I'm flatline trolling, I mix that up quite a bit. But I also, when I'm trolling smaller crankbaits, I've got a really neat series of rods, a telescoping glass trolling rods in the Premier series by Jake Roy. They're a little older. I don't even think that they make them anymore, but they're a medium power trolling rod, and I've kicked some butt on those for walleye size and baby death rider size crankbait. So that's kind of where I'm at for rod type. How about you, man?
Well, I'll say this, I have the muskyshop.com pulled up here. I just pulled that up. They've actually moved over. You've got the Mojo trolling rod now, I think, has replaced that series. And my thing is this. Here's my deal with trolling. If I am going out and I am going to only troll, right? And we're going to talk about when and why to troll in a here down the road in this podcast. But as far as my rods for trolling on an average day of fishing, I'm going to take my rod and my boat partner or client's rod, and there's going to be two of the rods that we troll. I might get out of the rod locker two other rods, you know, to run a spread. Now, obviously, this is dependent on your rod limitations on where you're at. But I really don't think about it that much.
You and I are the same on that.
Yeah.
Where you know, a rod that's, I mean, I think you got to have some noise. You're obviously not going to troll the pool cube.
Right.
You know, I think you got to have at least an 8 and a half, 9 foot rod. Mm-hmm. That'll do. But I love that you and I, you know, and I think a lot of folks on the Muskie 360 app will appreciate that, that you don't need to have something super fancy.
Bro, I can't afford a second set of trolling rods.
And does it really matter though?
And here's the deal, like I have, it's a very inexpensive Dipsy diver rod that I'll use like for like crazy heavy stuff, and that thing, mm-hmm. I think that rod's like $30. I picked that up at like a sporting goods store. So me and you are in the same boat there, where it's like, I'm not going out and buying a separate set of trolling rods because of the cost. Number one, the storage, too.
Exactly. It's like, I think there's more important things that we're about to talk about that dictate success on trolling more so than a special type of rod.
Absolutely. But, I mean, if you want specified trolling rods, And you have the boat to do it. Let's say you've got a 20-footer or like the Guru's old boat before you got rid of that. That thing was a party barge. You know, you could have like your specified rods. What's cool about that is like you got, what is this, the Mojo series that St. Croix offers. You know, they max out. The top price of their trolling rods is a 10-foot heavy that's $249.
Pound for pound and price, you can't beat them.
Right. All the way down to, you can go, and I've talked about this in other articles, there's 6 6-foot rods that Walmart sells that are pieces of crap, and if you break them, that are like big game and an ugly stick and all this stuff that you could use as trolling rods that are $30, and who cares, right?
Exactly.
So if you got the room, so I guess to answer that question to everybody that's sort of thinking this, if you got the space and you want specified rods for it, get them. You don't have to have specified rods. That's just the way I think both of us feel. Next up would be, what reels? Are you running specified trolling reels, Chaz?
When I'm getting serious on trolling, I would say yes. Most of the time, I've got, but again, it's very basic. It's something that's going to cost you. And again, MuskieShop.com will have them. I run the Daiwa line counter reels.
Yeah, the Alexa line counter. Yeah, they got them.
Yep, Alexa line counter. I've also got Garcia, like they're basic 6500 line counter series. I mean, I got a bunch of different types, and they're not very fancy, and they get the job done. So I think that the beauty of it is I'm not casting them, so they're not receiving the general wear and tear that my other rods receive. So I can get away with using a reel that's not as spectacular and has a line counter on it, it's not going to get the wear and tear off.
And I think probably like, and you and I, we're going to align a lot on this, folks, and there's a billion ways you can skin the cat. But I do the same thing. I run a pair of Akumas. So I've got a pair of Okuma line counters, which I'm a lefty, so I reel with my left hand. So Okuma has the left-handed line counters. And I run a pair of those, but even if I'm running multi-rods, like I'm only running two line counters. And once again, for the amount of cost, and I've talked to the Guru about this, they make, and I think Muskie Shop has them, if not, other places have them, they even make clip-on line counters. I know Berkley makes them, and a few other companies make these line counters. You can clip onto the rod and do it. I guess we would be remiss real quick to not touch on alternative methods for line counters.
There's a couple other things you can do.
Do you know what I did on one of my rods, bro, is I measured from the front of my, you know, the line guide on any reel. I fish a Boo Garcia, as everybody that listens to the podcast knows this at this point. And so I fish round abus. I measured 2 feet out from the line guide on my reel to the to my rod, right? So how far is 2 feet from that? And I took a piece of fluorescent tape and made a little sliver, like a little line right there. And so I can strip and go 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. And, you know, if I need 20 feet of line out to run a DR or something like that, I could just quickly strip it out and at least be in the ballpark, right?
And absolutely. So
that's my cheat. Done. Yeah.
My cheat is just understanding that it's different on all your reels, but that line guide goes back and forth. You can
count them.
You can just count the number of passes, and if you just know that one pass is, you know, I don't know, 5 feet, passes is 10 feet, and you just, you're not going to be, you know, specific by the actual book, but you'll be in the general ballpark.
Right. So, I mean, once again, I think, you know, it's not a matter of if you should have these or not. Don't count yourself out of the game if you can't afford them. You know,
Absolutely.
I mean, the biggest thing is this. I'm going to tell you flat out, and I don't care if it ruffles feathers. Our sport is expensive, and it's getting more expensive day by day. And there's no shame in the game of figuring out ways to save money. You know what I'm saying? It's the same way we feel about those rods. I mean, to me, it's like having line counter reels is almost a luxury. And
do you need them? No. If you can get them, but, you know, you can do without.
Yep. And another little trick for you guys, you country boys like me that might not have them, your rod, if it's an 8'6" rod, you can quickly figure out where 8 feet is, right? Now, I don't math too good, Chaz, but quickly I can figure out, you know, 8 times 3, you know what I'm saying, if I have to.
Right. Exactly.
And that's another trick there. So don't count yourself out of the game if you don't have those. For me, though, like you said, the cool thing, I think, with trolling reels, if we're going like a specified line counter reel, is a lot of times those last forever. And you brought up that point about, like, I bet you're Lexus. When's the last time you cleaned those line counter Lexus? Once a year?
Yeah, once a year, if, yeah.
If, because they're not getting that casting bang, you know, and the same kind of wear and tear. So, I mean, I use Chaz's line counters are the Daiwa Lexus on Muskie Shop. They're $199. I'm running the Akuma Convectors. They're $99. But again, you can get a clip on line counter, or you can put a mark on your rod, or you can use the length of your rod and go from there to sort of gauge how far you're out there. So there's there's going to be a billion ways to skin the cat here.
Yep.
The next question that we get, and like I said, we're trying to go in an order here that makes sense for everybody that's asked all I'm talking hundreds of questions here. Leaders, do you have a specified trolling leader that you use, Chaz, or what are your thoughts on leaders while trolling?
Yeah, I mean, I do. So mine is the Joe Bucher Outdoors. We call it the 981.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the regular 11-inch channel wire steel leader, all very swivel. It's, I think the actual, I can't believe I'm actually remembering this, but quote unquote memory, and maybe check if I'm right. I think it's a 558-981 is the actual model number.
Uh-huh.
We just call it the 981. And so I've always, it's when I throw, I mean, on almost all my applications, it's pretty standard, and that's what I use to troll. That's just me.
Yeah.
So I don't go with anything fancy as far as having some specialized leader.
You know, here's my deal. You know, like we were just talking about when it comes to having, like, I usually troll four lines, and I have my two rods we're casting that day and two specified trolling rods. On those specified trolling rods, I don't want to get too ahead as far as, like, baits and stuff like that. But on those, I will run, like, a fluoro or a hard mono. That's, by the way, that is the poor man's gift to musky fishing, is hard monofilament, by the way. Because I run 150-pound saltwater hard mono trolling.
That's cool.
you can get that crap for, I think I buy like 200 yards of it for $10 and crimp it up myself. Yeah, you can get the parts from Musky Shop and the crimps and all that stuff, and I'm sure they have some hard mono that they can hook you up with. So I run 150-pound hard mono, but I do run a swivel on that one. So, like, on my casting rods, I'll stick with my straight wires. But for bigger cranks, let's say I'm running a headlock, or I'm running a matlock, or I'm running a 9-inch shallow rate or something like that, I want that swivel there. And you're actually, yeah, it is the, just to, you're dead on that Booker, on that product number on that thing.
But,
yeah, you are. And I mean, there's tons of options. You know, the Musky Shop has their own brand, and it doesn't matter how you skin that cat again. There's a lot of options there. Here's my thing. The only thing I'd say about a leader is the bigger baits that you're running, a swivel really comes into play for me, so it's not rolling over. That's a question of speed, which we'll get to later. But I don't think you have to have, like, a specified leader. If you're
I don't know. Yeah, if you're just getting into the game on trolling, or if you're like me and you've trolled for a while, I mean, I personally, and again, everybody, you probably troll more than I do. I mean, but again, you don't need to have something extra special to be agree on that. I mean, it can, you know.
Yeah, your casting leader will suffice.
Exactly. I'm sure you've caught a gazillion muskies, as have I, by using your casting rod. You know, yeah, it's like.
And just going for it. So, but, you know, we're sort of, and like I said, we're trying to give you both in the spectrums of what we use and what you can use. I mean, don't overthink it. Once again, we're still on that same thing when we go from rods to reels to leaders.
Well, I love this idea of don't overthink it, Steve, and I think it's just like, you know, don't overthink getting the fanciest equipment. You don't always need that. I mean, it's great to have it if you can afford it, but you don't need it to be successful.
Right.
The same thing goes with, you know, we're talking about the types of equipment. You know, if guys and gals out there are listening and you want to try this new tactic this season, you know, what Steve and I are talking about is use what you've got.
Well, and use what you got, because, like, if you're new to the trolling game, don't sit here and load up with 14 trolling rods and 14 line counter reels, and you're sitting here going, I've got so much money invested in this game. It's just like the entire sport of you grow. You start with a little bit.
I can do an analogy just like anything. How about this? When you're just getting into the game of golf, because believe me, if you're just starting to golf, you're going to suck.
Yeah.
And don't go out and buy yourself, you know, $500 drivers, Titleist. Just get yourself a basic set. And then when you get good, and if you really are into it, then you can upgrade.
Absolutely.
And the same thing goes with trolling equipment and musky stuff. If you're really into it and you're really getting good at it and you want to fine-tune a couple of things, then go for it.
Yeah, and I was just thumbing through here, and like I said, for point of reference for people so they can see this stuff, the Musky Shop has Cigar Big Game Blue Label. It's 130 pounds, and they're selling like a big old spool of that stuff, like $16 for making leaders for trolling. Once again, I mean, when it comes to that leader, because this is a question that gets asked every week, multiple times a week, your trolling leader, I don't think the material is going to affect the action too terribly much. It can to some degree, but having a swivel on that is of some importance. You know, it depending on speed.
I'm losing my train of thought. You're talking snap. I'm talking. What am I talking? What am I envisioning in my head? I can't even think of it right now. Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of a snap. Yeah, I don't know. That's possibly what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Oh, split ring. I use a split ring connected to my steel leader. Sorry for the idea. But yeah, but all my depth graders have a split ring on it, and that for me keeps them locked to my leader, and then I think that it really allows them to have full movement, or as much as I can provide.
And then we're going to keep booking here to cover as much territory as we can, folks, so we can get into the tactics. The next thing that everyone asks, what rod holders do you guys use? First off, Chaz, if I'm starting from ground zero, and we're going to try to cover from like beginner to advanced here, but if I'm starting at ground zero, I'm not even worried about rod holders.
Nope. I was going to say my first rod holder is my, you know, that is the majority of it. If folks have seen my Muskie Master YouTube videos out there that where I'm doing a lot of fall trolling when it gets cold out and yep. I can't cast effectively. I really love, and a lot of, and thank you to the folks that have messaged me to say thank you for the technique, which again, you know, I learned from Joe Booker, and it's very effective. It's just flat line. You hold the darn rod with your arm and your body.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a very effective way to troll. You know, you're not going to get multi. I mean, you can get, and again, like you said, Stephen, it depends on your local regulations. But when I've got two other guys in the boat, we're all holding a rod. There's three rods. There's three lines. There's three rod holders right there.
What is the Wisconsin reg on that?
Three lines.
Total per boat.
Yep, three lines total per boat. Yes.
You know, so you that's going to differ. But, you know, if you're past that, let's say, and one thing, we'll jump ahead a little bit here. But here's my thing is baby steps. Yes, that's like, what, remember the movie What About Bob? And he's like, baby steps.
Yep.
You know, take baby steps when you're trolling, because like, I remember the first time I trolled by myself, dude. And this is like the worst experience ever. I was with Jody. We were out and we were trolling, and I thought I was Ricky Badass, right? So I'm going to run, I'm going to run two 10-inch swim whizzes or believers. I'm going to run two 10-inch believers. I'm going to run two DRs, and this is the first time I've ever tried to troll, right? So I've got four lines out. You do not even know how bad of a cluster that was. Like 15 minutes in, I have all four of them wadded up and they're tangled, and there's a rat's nest dragging behind the boat. Start slow. So start with like one rod, right? Start with the one rod. Oh, here she comes. She's actually bringing Daddy a Pepsi. We're just talking about the sport of the moment was gone trolling episode there with the believers. But anyway, that's my thing. It's like start with baby steps. Like if I'm going to start trolling from the ground up, start with one rod, then we go to two rods, then we go to three rods, then we go to four rods, and then you can end up doing what I call
a sea hunt. You got to start baby. You got to take baby steps. Get comfortable because, yeah, you get, you got, yeah, I'll just leave it at that. You got to get comfortable.
You got to get comfortable.
It's so different. It can be very complex. Yeah.
We're going to go to the next one, which we get a billion of two. We're going to go to multiple rods here in a second, but proper drag setting.
Oh, wait, I have to interrupt for a second, Stephen. We did not hit rod holders.
Oh, man, we suck. Yeah, we got there because we were talking about hand holders. Okay.
No, we want to, you and I never go on tangents.
Thank you. No, never. Yeah, I was actually still, my wife was sitting here laughing, walking out of the room because she remembers that day so fondly of me. Literally, dude, I'm standing there in the back of the boat with four lines all tangled up. And I looked at her and I said, well, that took the sport out of it. And we went home. You know, I was done. As far as rod holders, dude, I run from the Muskie Shop, I run the Scotties. Right.
Yep, I've got Scotties too. I've got some inshore stuff. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
a whopping $23.99, and the one thing I'll say is this: I have bought the ones from Wally World before, the Atwood. Like there's like as far as grades of trolling holder or rod holders, there's like the Atwood and Bass Pro Shop ones, which are like really thin plastic, and then they make like a heavier duty Atwood, and then they make the Scotty, and the Scotty is like the cheapest good rod holder I've found, because I'm a cheap son of a bitch. I like the cheaper I can find, the better I am. That Scotty is the cheapest one I've found that doesn't suck. What other ones like have you run?
You know, I've got some stuff, some old inshore stuff. I don't even know if they make them anymore.
I don't think they do. Yeah,
my Ranger. So that's actually what And I've also just, I don't even know the brand. I've also bought some stuff on Amazon where I just looked, and like you said, I found the cheapest rod holders I can get. Although they are plastic, they're not as beefed up as the Scotties. They work.
Yeah.
They still work. I mean, I have gotten a little cheaper on some of the rod holder stuff because I'm more so flatlined and holding the rod more than I am using the rod holders.
And I've been on some highfalutin boats with the downy salty stuff, and that stuff is, if you got the money for it, Musky Shop sells it. Those are bad, dude. I think they're galvanized, like the all metal.
Yeah, that stuff's crazy.
And those things are wicked. If you got the cash and you want to do that, those things are like indestructible, beast mode. You know, you can pull a headlock at 14 miles an hour, and that rod holder's not moving. You know, you could pull it. What was the old joke? Tom Gelb could pull a skier row trolling, right? These things could pull a skier just out of the rod holder. But, you know, once again, just like we're talking all this gear here, I think the Scotty's going to be like the lowest grade that I find to be serviceable, you know, so... Looking at that, and they're robust and stuff. And like Chaz said, you can find these other options. So I don't think like at the end of the day, it's about what your outfit is. I don't think you're going to catch more fish because you've got a $80 rod holder or you got a $15 rod holder.
Nope, not at all.
My biggest trolling fish is not even a muskie. Remember the gigantic...
Really?
My biggest trolling fish is, as far as weight, is that striper I sent you.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. That thing was ridiculous.
So, here, me and my wife we're trolling in February. I was trolling a 8-inch DR, and my rod holder just went berserko. My rod goes berserko, and I caught a monstrous striper, pound for pound. They're fighters. They're a heavy fish. And here's this cheap Scotty, and it didn't even budge. Okay, that's all I needed to know. I've told the story on the podcast, a foul hook and a beaver. So there you go. So find it serviceable. So if you guys want to know, Scotty's going to be my low end. You know, and you can go up from there, whatever works for your boat. So don't overthink
it
again. All right. Proper drag settings. I know it's hard to explain, but talk me through your proper drag settings, Jess.
Sure. So I start with let's say I'm using a casting rod, which doesn't really matter. So my drag setting, I did this, you know, over the opening weekend here, getting everything reacclimated with my musky tackle. I threw my fake throw to my buddy Mike Richardson. I said, Mike, hold that rod, and I take that leader real safely so you make sure you're not gonna, you know, yank a hook into your hand, and I give it a nice, real big tug. And I try to set mine just from a casting standpoint where it doesn't give much, but it would give on something. And again, I'm setting the drag from the rod tip, not from the reel, which is really important to make a decision for everybody.
Yes.
If you're pulling the drag out close to your reel and you think it's tight, it's probably not. You've got to pull it from the rod tip. So that's your starters. I set mine so I can barely pull it out. Also, if I'm fishing with inexperienced muskie anglers, I tend to set their drag a little bit looser just to absorb some of the problems. So let's say I've got my casting drag set. It's pretty tight, but it does have some give to it. If I hook a big fish, it can pull it. It's under the right load. I'll just back off that by like three clicks. There's no scientific measurement. I just back off that drag setting. Once I know that that's set where I want, when I know I'm going to troll and I'm going to troll seriously, I just back off that about maybe two, three clicks. That's it.
Yeah.
And
the thing is this, and for everybody that's asked this question, drag settings are all about feel. Number one is, and you said it, and I, you know, Amen, hallelujah. No one checks their drag right. The fish is pulling the fish is pulling at the end of the rod, not right there in front of it.
Yeah.
And that is my biggest pet peeve. I'll get clients, they'll go, well, this drag is too tight. And they're pulling at the rod face. And I say, pull it at the end of the rod. And they're able to pull it. I go, that's my hookup power while casting. My rule of thumb is this. Is my trolling drag is looser than that of my casting drag, just like yours, but not by much.
Yeah, not by much.
Not by much.
Like, I would say, the gold standard for me, how do you know if your drag is set properly? Well, here's how you'll know. If you snag a fish crib and it doesn't give,
yeah.
Then, or you pop a line real quick and you snag a rock or a reef or something, then it was way too tight. If you snag a crib, I do all the time. I'm trolling around these fish groups and make structure on my chain and flowage is the right fish. I hook these things, and it'll pop pretty good, and I'll feel it, but the boat will still be moving forward, and I will still, it'll be stripping line off the reel. So that's when I know I'm getting set well. I'm not breaking lines on snags, you know.
And that, dude, that's something we didn't even have in here. Guess what? You're going to get snagged. A bunch.
Oh, God, yeah.
And if you're not prepared, if you're not prepared for that, it's not the game for you. But the biggest trick I'll give you as far as like getting a snag out is this: is even with multiple lines, I will let that thing pull line, pull line, pull line, pull line, right? And I will try to make a directional change where I come back just past that thing and pull it out backwards.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it is just pull it out backwards.
If you can do it, I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. But I love that scenario because I've been on boats with people where it's like, you know, I'm not guiding them. I'm just on like a friend's boat or something, and they set the stuff, and I'm sitting here going, you know, I didn't check the drag. It's their gear, and they're the captain, and we'll hit the first snag, and it's like snap. You just know immediately they don't have to set those drags. So I think you nailed it. If you snag that thing up or you drag against a piece of structure or cover, it should be able to peel line easily under with some force on it. Would that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So the deal with this, like a lot of these trolling fish too, when they hit, they're hitting so fast that the drag sort of locks down. It's not the same as like a smooth pull. When you snag, it's a smooth pull that's a consistent amount of pressure. A fish striking is quick, and the drag chokes down and then sort of opens up to some degree, if that makes any sense. So.
It does. Because, when you snag something, it's just a hard there's an unforgiveness. There's not much forgiveness to it, and it does just strip out. I think a lot of times for me on my strikes that I get from muskies, it's like at first it feels as if I'm snagged, and then it's like there's like a 2 second pause where I'm like, is that oh crap, that's a fish, and it's like then all of a sudden it's not a consistent rip, you know.
Hey, I got to tell you something to break this up a little bit. And I didn't even tell you before we did the podcast. I texted Joe earlier. We were talking about snagging and you were talking about hooks and all this crap earlier. So my client yesterday put a 700 booker tail through his calf.
Through what?
Through his calf, the back of his leg.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're going to share that. Me and Joe already said me, you, and Joe are going to do a guiding follies kind of podcast down the road.
Oh, that'd be hilarious.
So I'll fill people in, but it was ridiculous, dude. This guy straight up, I had a huge multi-fish day yesterday, and we didn't even fish sundown because this guy, he was standing there and he has a booker tail through the back of his leg. Anyway, I was just filling Chaz in. We'll fill everybody else in on the gory details of that later. Anyway, so the next subject we get asked all the time, how do I set up multiple rods? Obviously, so we've talked about our rods, our reels, our rod holders. How do you set multiple rods? Okay.
Well, I'll take the flatlining. Maybe you take the rod holders.
You got it.
When I do flatlining, and I've got two buddies with me, so we got our three rods. And sometimes we've got four guys, and one guy sits and tells the jokes, and and get some snacks out and stuff, so we'll all take turns. But usually we try to have three guys, three rods. And the way we do it is I'm working the boat, and so my line is generally line, it's the middle line, because I'm controlling the outboard. Mm-hmm. I got a guy on the port, and I got a guy on the starboard that are holding their rods, you know, out far on angle. So, that, you know, they're probably out 8 feet from where my line is on either side. And the only reason I don't need seasons is, like you said, Stephen, you know, don't need to be a math rocket scientist to know that when you got a 9-foot rod that's pulled out from the side of the boat, it's probably about 8 feet away from where my line is.
Mm-hmm.
And I could run 50 feet, 70 feet, 90 feet of line out with three lines. I can make fairly aggressive turns with three lines at 85 feet of line out on each rod.
Yeah.
And we don't have a ton of problems with snagging each other's. We really actually have very few problems with ever snagging the line of somebody else. Unless your crankbait is running off, which I was going to bring this up later, but if your crankbait's not tuned properly, then you're going to have a lot of problems.
Yes.
Doesn't matter how you've got your setup going. But that's my flatline setup is, you know, three guys in a boat, two rods off the side, and my rod's usually right down the middle in the back.
Yeah.
So, I think that we regardless of how many people I have in the boat, because I'm not restricted where I'm at as far as rods, I run five, right? Whether it's me by myself or me and three clients, five rods. So what I'm running, and we're going to get to planer boards here in a second, but I run two planer boards. Those are pretty much even with me, which I run a console. Chaz runs a tiller. We're going to talk about that a little bit down the road here. But so my planer board rods are sort of even. Well, not even. They're even with one another, but they're slightly behind the console. My two outside rods that are inside of the planer boards are running in the back corners. My down rod is running at an angle straight behind the engine, right? So if you can sort of envision rod holders one and two are even basically where the seat is on a console bolt. Three and four are in the back corners, and that fifth one is right there to angle off the transom. The way that I get those out is, and I'll say this right now, I could not run multiple rods easily by myself solo if it wasn't for an autopilot trolling motor. So,
yeah,
you know,
right.
Oh my goodness. And that's my biggest trolling trick of if, when I'm setting my rods and I'm setting multiple rods, I'll put that thing by myself and set up five rods. I'll put that thing on like speed two and have it on a heading lock. So I know I'm moving forward the entire time so I can easily set my stuff up. So that's my multiple rod setup. So I can run five. Where I'm at, there's no rod restrictions. I call what I do sea hunt. You know what I'm saying? It's like I've got a billion rods going there. So that's my setup. If I'm feeling lazy, I might run three, which is I'll run the two back rods. Chaz, and this is one thing we didn't even make a note of, but people have asked, was like, what are the best positions in the boat for lure control? I really feel like those back corner positions are the best. I feel like the closer my rods are to the engine, the more precise my lure control is. Would you agree with that?
I would totally agree with you on that. I think that's 100%. I have the same experience. Yes.
Yeah. So if you're running, like, let's say you're running two rods, right? Or you said Wisconsin's three max per boat, right? What if you're running?
On my water. Some of the waters in my area will allow four.
Right.
And so it varies on some of the bodies of water, but and on a lot of the waters I run, it's just three.
Okay. So, you know, if I was going to pick my poison, if I'm limited to, like, let's say I'm limited to two rods, right? I'm going to go with my rods in the furthest back of the boat as I can get them. You know, and then I'm extrapolating from there. You know, so I've seen stuff, guys on St. Clair, which we're going to talk about trolling mass in a minute, running what, 43 freaking rods? I mean, Homer LeBlanc was salmon fishing. I mean, these guys are doing that stuff. So that's my multi-rod setup. That's Chaz's multi-rod setup. You can do more than that, or you can do less than that. But that's like the way that I run mine, how Chaz runs his, what he's holding. And Butch brings up to the next thing. We've had a billion questions. How do I use planer boards, and what planer boards do you use? Lay it on me, Chaz.
Interesting. I brought this up. I've got the offshore planer boards, man.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's pretty simple tactic as far as like how I usually do it. And I'm curious to hear your tactic. But I, you know, if I want to run something down 50 feet, I let 50 feet of line out with a line car. I attach the planer board, and I let it sail. And then I let out additional line, and I let that thing get out to a spot that I want, where I think it's in a good location, and I lock the rod up. It's that mm-hmm. simple.
One thing that I have found, and I'm Chaz Martin, I promised, once you fish with me and we troll, and we run planer boards, you will buy the planer boards that I have. I need to call the Musky Shop, needs to have these things. Jay, I know you listen. We've got to talk about this at some point because I haven't even told you about these things. My planer boards that I run are Supra Cruise. They are from, these things were a pain in the butt to get. They're from the Netherlands. They look like they're designed by the people that make tables from IKEA. And they're the tiniest little planer boards that can pull a headlock. They're the most ridiculous planer boards. So I use those planer boards. I've previously run Churches. I like the Churches. I'm not a big fan of the Churches makes a TX44 super planer board. Not a big fan of it. I could never get that thing to run the way I wanted to, because the way I run my planer boards is, what I'll do with my driver's side on a console steer planer board is that planer board is the most active bait in the entire spread. So what I'll do with that bait is, let's say I'm running four. So if you guys can envision, I got two parallel with the driver, two parallel with the transom, and one going out the back in the wash. That one that is parallel with me, I will feed that thing line continually. So if I'm running a contour, that bait is usually a shallow rater, and it is usually like 40 feet, 50 feet, 60 feet off the boat, and I'm running that thing close to timber. I'm running it close to the shallows, and when I know a weed bed's coming up, I will have that thing positioned. So if my boat's running at 20 feet or 15 feet on my troll, I have that planer board over there fishing that weed edge. And so, I can run that planer board out there. And so I'm fishing two areas simultaneously. And a lot of time, that's my planer board tactic. With that being said, on my passenger side of the boat, bow and stern, if you will, that bait is usually a DR. And that thing's running at 10 feet consistently if I'm running 20 feet. And I sort of have that as a stagnant planer board. So I have an active planer board and a stagnant planer board. Now, how you use them is simple as far as the actual planer board itself. The whole job of a planer board is to get your lines away from the boat. So if you've never used them, they're in the sole purpose of that is to allow you to run multiple lines. So if you're new to that game, you can just put that planer board on. And the biggest thing I say is this, like Chaz sort of talked about earlier. Let's say we're running a baby DR, right? I know me and you both probably run baby DRs, 25 feet, sort of an average, at least we're in the ballpark. So let's say that we want to run a baby DR out there and we're going to put 25 feet out of line. At the 25 foot mark is where you attach the planer board. Okay, so I'm getting down to the bare basics on this. Where you attach the planer board dictates how deep that bait will run. How much line you let out after the planer board is attached is how far that bait will run away from the boat.
Exactly. It's important to, and it really is that simple, though. Like
it is, but I'll tell you flat out, I'm not embarrassed to say it. When I first started looking at planer boards, I had no concept of how they worked and didn't understand it.
So if you're listening, you're new to this.
Yeah. Like, so what? It's these guys that are all like, you don't know how to run a planer board, you dumb SOB. Screw you. So what?
Yeah,
everybody's got to learn. Everybody's got to learn. And so the planer board's job is to take your bait and get it away from the boat. That's it. I guess the only other thing I'd mention with planer boards, because we've got a lot of ground to talk cover, is this. Is planer boards make fighting a fish difficult. And what you've got to do is catching a muskie on a planer board by yourself sucks. I mean, it is bad.
You got to pray to God that they're hooked well. I mean,
yeah.
It's like, because you're trying to get the thing close enough, unclip the damn thing, then, you know, keep a tight line and put them back in the net.
The litany of shit never ends. So get a planer board that'll pop off there quick. But trust me, we can't, you got to fight that planer board up, and then you got to fight the fish. But it's a whole other can of worms when you're by yourself. But your boat partner, if you're with your guide, they'll get off quick. But, planer board's not a scary tool. Don't be afraid of it. It's solely to get your baits away from your boat. And we'll go into the next one, which is something that I have some experience with, but not a ton. And basically, the summarization of the questions asked the most here at the app is, what is and how do I use a trolling mast? Okay.
A trolling mast?
A trolling mast. So here's, I'm gonna break this down into two categories. You will see guys that will run basically what's an aluminum or a galvanized pipe that'll have multiple rod holders on either side of their boat. Or they will run a mast in the middle of their boat. What they're doing with that and what you can do with that is you can run multiple planer boards. So we could have, theoretically, let's say we're fishing arbitrarily, we're fishing shallow raiders. You could fish three trolling planer boards on the right side and three planer boards on the left side of your boat. This mast will allow you to have all those rods on one holder and utilize planer boards to get them at different distances from your boat. Okay. Obviously this is completely divergent from what me and Chaz talked about starting with one rod and keeping it simple. This is like we are into Sea Hunt level Jacques Cousteau. We're trying to troll up Nessie tactics.
Yeah, that would be kind of a graduate level course type thing.
If I'm trolling Green Bay or I'm trolling big water, that's an option. To learn how to use a trolling mast, you need to master how to use a planer board by yourself. And that's it. I mean, that's the question. Like we get guys asking, should I buy a trolling mask? I want to learn, a trolling mast. I want to learn how to troll. Learn how to troll with planer boards using three rods, then four rods, then five rods, and then
build
you can
your way up.
Right, build it up. Start with that handhold rod, and now we're out to, I've got 79 rods, and they're all running Fire Tiger shad wraps, and I'm trolling Green Bay, because that's what everybody does. You know, I've got my shad wraps going. We're going to catch a Stalker 50 off Green Bay. But anyway, I'm not knocking it. That's just it can be a mess. And like I said, we've got a lot of questions on this. So here's the guys asking about masts and there's multiple rod, multiple planer board setups. I don't feel like that's something that's easy to do without a boat partner. That's a seasoned boat partner that knows the physics and how the boat is moving through the water and how that's done. Okay. So you're going to have to work as a team. I mean, if you put me and you on a boat and said, hey, you have to troll with a trolling mast, I guarantee it's going to be a shit show. You know what I'm saying?
It would take us a while to figure it out. Like anything, it just takes practice. It just takes time to get comfortable with your equipment.
Exactly. You got to dial it in. So,
they're just baby steps.
Baby steps. What about Bill?
And it depends on the water you're fishing. If you're fishing the bay, if you're fishing St. Clair, you know, stuff like that, you know, that mega, that hardcore equipment it might be something you want to look into.
Or work up to, yeah.
Yeah, when I'm fishing my smaller inland waters in northeast Wisconsin, Violet County, I don't feel that I need that to be effective. So I think it all depends on the type of water you're fishing and, you know, all that, you know, that all that kind of lumps into one thing. The type of water you're fishing really dictates the type of equipment that you need to be effective.
My wife's PB, right, is trolling a shallow raider behind her kayak, holding the rod and rowing on either side.
Yeah,
How more primitive do you get than that?
Yeah, and it works. It's like the same. My favorite way to troll is just flatline trolling, holding it with my arm and my body. It's like, and I love that method of trolling. By the way, there's a lot of benefits to that too that I love. Part of the reason I love it is because I can feel everything. I can feel when my bait snags, weeds leave. When I've got a fishing line snag. If I'm not hitting the bottom, I know if I'm dragging a 14-inch smallmouth bass.
Yeah.
That's getting, you know, that's why I like that style. You know.
What I was going to say is, and you're nailing the point home, is just like casting. It's about if you want to be a great troller, you got to get in tune with your equipment and know the feel of it.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
And I mean, in what you're saying, preach on, because, you know, once you feel that and you know, and we covered this previously, that big question of how do I find the transition from soft to hard bottom? I mean, you can feel it.
Yeah. Let me know when we're going into that.
I know. We're getting there, folks. And like I said, you know what? We're known for being retards on here, Chaz. Let's break this up with a quick word of wisdom from the Musky Guru.
We need one.
We need it.
The guru says, "The tug is my drug."
Oh my goodness! Thank you so much, Guru.
I feel so enlightened again.
We are keeping as straight and as dry as we can because we get so many questions on this. But I needed the Guru. The Guru knows all. I learned everything I know about trolling from the Guru. Didn't you as well?
Oh yeah.
I mean absolutely. every iota. So
everything. He is the Guru.
But, you know, like we were saying before the word of wisdom, the two best trollers I know, Tom Gelb and Joe Booger.
Oh, yeah. And
they're so diametrically opposed into what they do.
Yep. Very different, but, I mean, it's very interesting. And I've been lucky to learn from Joe, and I've learned both tactics from Joe. You know, planter birds and flatline, and you know, I would say, maybe I'm wrong, but I think Joe seems to show a preference to flatline trolling. When we troll in the fall together, that's what we mostly do.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I probably love it the most out of all the different ways to do it.
Oh, absolutely. But like I said, more than anything, the reason I even said that is like, just like casting, you have to make this your own. And you've got to sort of make a decision of what am I comfortable with, what works on my body of water, and guess how you figure out what works on your body of water? It's the same painful process that learning at casting was, period. Which brings us into the next big topic. When and why should I troll? What do you think, buddy?
Take it away. A very basic, I'll give my 1 minute speech here on this. Why would you troll? Why? Well, first of all, if you're fishing shallow water cover, one idea, train of thought is if you're fishing shallow water cover, I don't care what it is, rocks, weeds, wood, timber, and you're not, you know, getting the results that you want, you might have that thought that, well, maybe these fish, maybe there's more active fish that are out in deeper water. And we can just leave it very basic like that. Like if the shallow water bite sucks, one of the things that I just say, well, okay, let's totally flip it 180 and go troll deeper water. Because, you know, there you go. That's, and so that's one thing. Two would be a feeding preference. And I would say that when I've got, you know, a lot of times we've got mayflies, the mayfly hatch here in northern Wisconsin, or, you know, really all over the country. When you get bug hatches and you've got a lot of, generally I'll call it just bait fish, you know, feasting on, you know, just bug hatches, this will push a lot of big fish away from the shallow cover. They'll push them over, you know, suspended over mudflat, suspended in different areas of a lake. It can be very difficult to target these types of fish with casting applications. Not that you can't, because you can, but it's difficult. So that's option two. And option three is when I've got fish that I think, I don't know, let's say I've got a big, big stretch of water to fish. I'll just get my third option. Huge stretch of water to fish, and let's say that fish seem to be scattered. It's fish don't seem to be in a certain location. I can't pinpoint where the muskies are at. Trolling would allow me to cover a vast amount of water and try a lot of different things in a short amount of time. A much shorter amount of time than you would be just simply casting. I can vary my depth. I can you know, just cover a lot of water, and I can do it quick.
Absolutely.
And I keep a lure in the strike zone for a long period of time and increase my odds of hooking a muskie. So that's what I troll in a nutshell.
I'm going to basically reiterate what you said, but my school of thought is Buck Perry, right? We all know, if you guys have delved into fishing in general, Buck Perry is a master troller, invented spoon plugging, Joe Bucher and a lot of other guys, Jimmy Houston, the Lindners, all of them attribute Buck Perry as who basically opened their eyes to structure fishing. And so if it's not clicking casting, right, that's phase one. Phase one is the fish are not shallow. Phase two is I'm checking mid-depth. Phase three is I'm checking these break lines. And when I'm to phase 2.5 and phase three, that's when I'm trolling. You know?
And I wanted to add in there, and I think I will say this. I wanted to say this because I think you would – I would say I primarily troll in kind of a little bit of a deeper application, but it's not to say that I never troll shallow. Mm-hmm. Not to say that I don't know the same. It's not to say that you never troll a weed line, because I do. I'll troll a weed line. I'll troll shallow again when the bite sucks, and I still am certain that those fish are shallow. But hey, it's like I'm going to have to cover a lot of water to maybe find one bite.
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, again, I don't care if you're trolling in 5 feet of water, you're trolling a double eight, you're trolling a big weighted spinner bait or something. Still, it's when I need to cover a lot of water, when I need to, you know, X, Y, Z. So I just wanted to say,
yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean,
dude, you don't need to troll.
No, not all the time. But the thing that drives me nuts at about, you know, sort of this question of when and why I should troll. Is I talk to so many guys who are like, I've never caught a fish trolling. You've heard that stuff too. I've never caught a trolling muskie. That's because
you haven't spent a lot of time trolling then.
Yeah, you're dragging baits when you're eating a sandwich. And you're not, you know, you're not focused in on prime areas, which, you know, the next question is about what are the prime areas to target, but you're not focused as that as a tactic. It's like an anecdotal. It's a secondary tactic opposed to, I'm not going to spin. And this just goes to about the way that
I love the way you're stating that.
Yes.
That it becomes a lot for the majority of folks out there. It's just kind of like the secondary thing.
Right. It's a last ditch effort, or I'm bored, which is.
Or like when you're going from one spot to the next, all these guys just. They cast a lure out there, they pitch it off the side, and they kind of troll on over to the next spot.
I'll give you my secret squirrel recipe for when and why I troll. I determine Weather muskies are on a location from my patterning. Now, I'm not going to sit here and we're not going to waste a lot of time on musky patterns. The rest of the app, the rest of all these podcasts are dedicated to that. But if I am confident, based upon weather, water, and other conditions, that muskies are present in an area and I can't connect with them casting, I immediately troll out of that area. Most of my days are spent, I will cast it and then I troll it before I leave it. That's my rule of thumb. A lot of areas too, when I'm coming into it, I will troll into it, I will cast it and troll out of it. And that's how I know that I've covered that area to the best of my ability. Which makes makes trolling, it's not an anecdotal secondary tactic. I am using it as a primary tactic to go, I'm going to troll it. I troll topwaters. I'll troll bucktails. I don't care what bait it is. I will cover water with that bait beforehand. I'll troll a top raider over top of a weed bed before I even go in and cast it.
Well, yeah, and the thing, you know, again, I'll just kind of riff off this a little bit. It's like,
yeah, absolutely.
Right now in my head of a particular reef. I've got a big reef in mind that I love. I know it holds multiple muskies. So let's say I go through that reef and I'm casting and I cover it, I mean, to the best of my ability with a partner, get two guys or gals, I have multiple baits in the water. We freaking got every nook and cranny of this particular structure and we didn't see a fish. Then I say, okay, there's fish that are relating to this structure. I'm going to get a pattern. It's when, like, you're just getting that, but I'm going to say something like this, like, the fish are not on that structure or they're inactive on that structure, but there's fish that are relating to it.
Yes.
And they're in water that's, like, off structure, relating to bait fish or relating to whatever hard bottom, if there's a transition line or something. Then I'm going to, like you said, before you leave, you've got to try. If you believe that there's fish there, why would you not troll? I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what it boils down to. If you want to be successful trolling, make it part of your game. Don't have it as a secondary afterthought. I mean, you nailed it, because, you know, we could wax eloquent for 4 hours about targeting pelagic fish, but when I'm thinking Canadian reefs and stuff, that fish might be 20 yards off that reef, but he's relating to it, and that's a hard fish to cast to. But
exactly.
I can drag a double 800 behind the boat and make, you know, circles that are sort of widening. And that's one thing I'll do on a reef. I will start tight and I'll go wider and wider and wider and wider until I feel confident I've covered that water. So, and it takes just minutes. You know, if you think about the time,
exactly,
and it's like setting up quick, going confident, going bam. All right, I've taken my two casting rods. I've got them hanging offside the boat. I'm going to take 10 minutes to make, you know, circles that widen out around this reef. I've checked it to the best of my ability, and you're going to be shocked about the amount of fish that you add to your seasonal catch ratio. You know, doing that. So, why and when you should troll, always.
Let me say this. I'll keep this very brief.
Absolutely.
I know we're running short on time a little bit. We got more questions. Another reason for why for me, and we're in a little bit different neck of the woods. For your muskie, you can fish really year round.
Yeah.
Because your warmer climate there in Tennessee. For me, when the water's getting cold enough, where I'll just say this: when my reels are locking up and I can't cast because the ice up, or it's just uncomfortable, then a trolling becomes a tactic that I lean on. So that's another reason why troll. Well, when you can't cast.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
If you have a disability, or if you're an aging muskie angler and you still want to stay in the game and you can't cast as long, troll.
Yeah. Absolutely. Troll and make that primary tactic. The next question that we have is, how do I target prime areas? I mean, we basically sort of covered that already. I'm not really going to do anything different than check those edges or check over cover and structure.
Yeah. Now what does he or she mean by how do I target prime areas?
Well, I guess the question is, while trolling, how do I target a reef, which we just talked about, or how do I target a weed bed? you know, the same to me, the same thing, the same rules apply. I'm going to check the deep edge. I'm going to check in tight and I'm going to check over it. You know, I mean, as far as a primary, I don't see, I guess maybe it's a thought process of maybe they're thinking it's a different primary for a trolling pass or a primary for casting, which I really don't see a huge differentiation between the two.
No, all we're talking about is presentation of the lure.
Yep.
And getting it in a fish's face. I mean, if a fish, I don't know how to necessarily describe that a little bit better than you just did.
Well, we will cover, and a lot of people have asked that, how do I target primaries while trolling? That comes from what we're talking about here in a second, which is lure selection, speed control, and depth control. And that's what that translates to the next three topics. But for those of you that ask that, how do you troll a primary? It's all based upon those, which I'll just go straight into, which is lure selection for trolling. How do you make that determination?
I think that generally speaking, the depth of your structure determines, I think about it like that. The depth of the structure that I'm trolling determines the tool that I'm going to use. So,
yes.
You know, if it's shallow, it's going to be a blade or something. If it's deeper and I'm on an edge, it could be a shallow raider. And if it's even deeper than that, then I go to baby depth raider or regular depth raider.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's how deep my structure is.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the whole thought process. That to me, though, comes back to patterning, which I think that one thing is detrimental to people that are new to trolling is they might be struggling on patterning while casting. Right. So if you can't pattern them at all, let's say you struggle at patterning what muskies are doing, then you're going to struggle in both facets.
I think you nailed it right there, man.
Because the trolling is not going to be your saving grace.
No, right? If you don't know where the muskies are at, you could cast your heart's content on, you know, some goofy structure, and you could troll it, and if there's no fish there, you're not going to find anything.
Right. So you have to pattern.
And I'm speaking from experience, by the way.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I've done that a lot.
Fishing too deep, fishing too fast, all this stuff. But your lure selection is based upon what pattern you have found. The way that, and we cover this all the time in articles and videos and podcasts, the way that you find a pattern is experimentation. So if you're trolling, your lure selection becomes a matter of experimentation as well.
Yes.
I mean, it's just... That is just a facet of the sport. I mean,
yeah, it's like you and I have talked so much, and you've gone to some really neat measures we can talk about later about casting speed and understanding the different rates of retrieve for, you know,
mm-hmm.
Let's just say a bucktail. I mean, fast, slow, what's working that day. It really varies day by day. The same goes for trolling. You know, the speed that you're trolling at, you know, it varies a lot. You have to experiment with it. It also, you and I have talked about this a lot. It really has a lot to do with water temperature.
Yeah.
You know, so we're talking about speed. We're talking about how fast should I troll, or, you know, how do I do that? I mean, water temperature for me is a humongous determining factor.
Which you're covering, that's the next big topic is speed control. What speed should I troll? And
boy, I know you said, it's look at your water temperature and kind of, would you say, Stephen, take it from there? I mean,
well, I would say this, which is speed control is based on water temperature. The colder it is, the slower I go. The warmer it is, the faster I go, which that ranges from, right? And this is a huge range, is 0.5 to 5. That's it. So you've got half a mile an hour to 5 miles an hour. What you have to do as an effective troller, you have to figure out, just like through your patterning, what is the appropriate speed for my water temperature? That's it. I mean, and that's one question that we get all the time. And I get in person, you get in person, we get at the app. People are looking for a silver bullet. What is this? There is not a magical speed.
No. And I vary mine a lot throughout the course of a trolling day. I mean, I'm always trying different speeds. Let's just say I'll give a hypothetical. You know, let's say we're trolling in northern Wisconsin, and it's the middle of October. We're post-turnover, and, you know, it's like I may be trolling a certain shoreline at a mile and a half.
Yeah.
And I may troll, and depending if I score on a fish net, I might go to another shoreline structure or whatever I'm trolling, and I might do it at 2.5. You know, it's all about experimentation. And it's not always staying consistent, I think, is a huge thing when we're talking about speed.
Yeah.
I try to vary my speed a lot. Slow down, speed up, slow down, speed up. Take turns to slow down. Work into the wind, work with the wind. I mean, there's a lot of things environmentally you can do to change your speed as well. Slow down your boat. I mean, you can use, like you said, you can even use your trolling motor. A lot of walleye anglers use the trolling motors. Even some muskie anglers, when they're trolling at super slow speeds, depends upon your outboard, your kicker, you know, whatever.
I mean, it's totally one of those things of that is something we can take you so far, but on the water, that's something you're going to have to figure out yourself, you know?
Exactly.
And again, you know, if it is 45 degree water, I'm probably never breaking 2.5 miles an hour. I'm going on the low end of that. If I'm talking 70 degree water, you know, mid 60s to mid 70s, I'm booking it. You know, I might be going 4 or 4.5, somewhere in between there and varying it. So, you know, you've got a range there. Our upper range, the max range on musky fishing that everybody sort of agrees with is we're not going to fish past 80 degrees, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the lowest is water freezes at what? What's the water temp? 32 or whatever it freezes,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So we have a narrow range. We have 32 to 80. And so you can expand the trolling range from half a mile an hour, 0.5 to 5. So if it's 79 degrees and we got a super hot year, run your bait super hot. If it's cold and it's winter, run on that slower. So you can sort of align those two numbers up and sort of find corollaries between, if it's 58 degrees on my body of water, I need to be running in the range of, you know, 1.6 to 2.3.
Yep.
You know,
and then I'll just expand this real quick so we can, you know, just get to this. So if you want to, let's just say, be at a certain depth, but stay slow, or be at a certain depth, but move fast, then, you know, then you start adjusting the now again, we don't need to go into line diameter right now, because there's so much we can go into. But, you know, then you start, you know, changing the length of line depending on what depth you want your lure to run and how fast you want it to be running.
I'm going to just go ahead and throw in, that's the next big question, is how do I accurately determine the lure running depths of my presentations?
I'll just jump in and say, look, Muskie 360, we got this awesome tool. It's got so many musky fishing tools on there, and it's free. That's why I love this app.
Yeah.
You can go on there, right, Stephen? And you there's all these charts that can help, you know, when you're getting involved in this trolling thing, that'll tell you how fast and what depth your lures are going to run.
And the thing is this, is, you know, most of them are done, you know, 2.5 to 4 miles an hour, some of that neighborhood.
Yep. And here's a way to test, guys and gals out there. This is so simple. Go out to, I can think of a flat on my home lake, Big Stone Lake of Three Lakes Chain. There's a humongous flat that is literally stays at 10 feet for like a mile. I'm just making an example of, get to an area where you know the depth and you know it's going to stay consistent for a long period, and test the data that's on the app with your actual real world data that you're taking in. And you just see, it's like when I'm running 40 feet of line out at 2 miles an hour, am I kicking bottom or am I, you know, that's what I kind of try to do.
Right. And the thing with this, running charts and stuff, if you're going slower than what it's charted at, you're going to need more line to achieve that depth. If you're going faster than it's it's the data's compiled at, you're going to need a shorter line. It's not a catch-all. I get a lot of guys that will ask us here at the app, you know, if I'm running at 3.9 miles an hour with lure X with X amount of feet, how deep is it running? You're going to have, that's one thing you're going to have to figure out your own by banging stuff, period.
Yep.
Like the way some of these charts have been done, Joe and I worked and we compared notes on baby DRs, and that data changes based on speed. And, you know, everything's done pretty much with 80 pound bee sprayed, and some other manufacturers have done different stuff. But, you know, the draft of your boat will change that. A litany of things will change those running depths. Those are a rough sketch of how deep this bait's going to run. If you run the same boat as me with the same horsepower engine, and we were in the same wind or in the same conditions that day, we might be pretty close. But you've got to sort of dial in yourself and go, okay, bait X runs at this, you know?
Yep,
And this is something we didn't even talk about beforehand, but I would even say this. The more dialed in you get, you're going to end up with a box of trolling baits that you don't cast because you trust them.
Exactly, exactly. And it's one of these things that Joe told me, and he still tells me this, but if you want to take your game to the next level and you don't have trolling in your arsenal, put it in there this year. Make 2020 your year where you learn how to troll, or if you already troll, expand on it and challenge yourself. But be prepared, like you're saying, Stephen. This all comes down to the old book by Bill Gardner, Time on the Water. Like,
yes.
You don't gain any of this knowledge. Like, the app and the articles and the videos, they all give you relevant, pertinent information, but you still have to go out there and do it yourself. You still have to go out there and test things and try things. You got to be willing to put in the time.
You got to be willing to fail. I hate
Absolutely.
To say it, but that's
Absolutely.
It. I sucked at trolling. 5 years ago, I was awful. And I've spent...
Well, I'm going to say, I still know that I'm happy with my victories in trolling, but I also have a long way to go. I know there's a lot of areas I want to improve in.
Right. And that's the thing is, like, you start... It's like we said at the beginning, baby steps. You know, if you're a kick-ass caster and you're just tearing fish up, and you're like, I know that, you know, every time I go on the water, I'm going to catch a fish casting, and you want to start trolling, you're starting at ground zero, because they're essentially two different games. We're trying to reach the same end goal, but the way we get there are completely different. And it's going to, but the same thing as this is, there's not that many days you get completely shut out if you're good at both.
No, If you're doing both, I would agree.
You know, if there's times I've gone to, you know, and we've all done this. You go on a big trip, whether you're going to Canada or you're going to another state or you're going on some trip where you go, this is my vacation, this is my big fishing trip. I'll tell you, man, there are trips where trolling has been the only game. And if I was solely a caster, that would have been a miserable trip.
Yes.
And so, absolutely. And like I said, I would rather catch my fish casting, period. I think most people would, but if you want to put fish in the boat, it's just too powerful. Before I get on too big of a tangent, the next big question is this, and it's perfect for the two of us. Boat control with a tiller versus boat control with a console.
Ooh, well, I mean, yeah, this is perfect for us. I mean, because
you run a tiller and I run a console.
And I love it because, well, first of all, it's all I've ever known, honestly. Yeah. I mean, I guess from the standpoint of the boats that I've owned, and I just like it because I can make really quick adjustments right there. And I mean, I think that I've trolled in consoles, and for me, there's a little bit of a, I just, it's not as tight. I can't make as tight a turn as I'm used to in my tiller. So I'll just leave it at that, I guess.
That, I mean, yeah, the tiller is tighter. The way I've overcome that, because I have a console, and what I do with my console is I actually find a speed using my trolling motor and my main engine simultaneously. And so having like, let's say I want to go 3.2, right? I'll engage my engine. I'll get it up to 2.5, and then I'll dial my remote steering trolling motor. I've got a Motor Guide XI5 with a remote, and I will actually control my boat the direction it's going with the trolling motor. And so the big engine's just pushing, and I'm actually controlling my contouring with the trolling motor.
And that's so interesting. Yeah.
That actually makes it tighter. So the pivot point is in the front of the boat, so it reacts similar to a tiller, because a tiller is a far superior trolling boat, period.
Yeah, another thing that I do, you know, I also back troll with that, you know, so yes. I really want to slow my speed down. That's actually something that a lot of folks don't understand. They'll say, well, how do you troll that slow?
Backward. Back troll. Yep.
Exactly. Back trolling. And that's, yeah, but again, yeah, there's so many different ways. I love that idea that you're throwing out there for guys with consoles. Because a lot of guys, I'd say probably most listeners do have a console.
Yep. I set their engines in gear, and whether you got a Hummingbird, you got one of the new Lowrance, whatever, you know, there's a bunch of remote. I sit there in my chair, I watch my fish finder, and I play a video game where I'm pushing left, right, up, and down with my remote control the entire time.
Yep.
Whether I'm going 5 miles an hour, I'm going a half mile an hour. And that's the thing, is I dig it. I really dig what I'm doing. Like, if I need to go like 1 mile an hour or slower, like maybe it's a 0.8, I will actually troll with the trolling motor, big engines off, and I'm just dragging around with that thing. And it gives me the precision control of a tiller. Now, it's not as precise, but it's close enough for jazz. So I've got this really tight control with the trolling motor remote while I'm watching my graph from the main console, and I can emulate that same effect of like, if I need to sort of bury those baits in a corner or something, bam.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, man, we have just been going at it here. The last big thing that we need to cover, and we've talked about electronics on the podcast, all that stuff applies. I know everybody's asking how to use your electronics when trolling. It's the same deal. Follow your contours, follow your graphs. The last thing we should talk about here, and I promise the next podcast will be as crazy as all the rest of them, but we've had so many on this. The last thing we need to hit here are, what are the big mistakes that people make trolling, and what are your tricks and secrets that you want to share with listeners?
Okay, biggest mistakes. I would say not having an understanding of the depth your lure is running. And yeah. I think you mentioned it before. It's this patterning idea. If you don't know, have at least an idea of where the muskies are, and you're just trolling to go troll because you think it's going to be effective, mm-hmm. as Stephen and Chaz are talking about trolling, it's not going to help. You've got to be trolling as a way to access fish that are difficult to access for casting. That's
absolutely
one thing. So if you're just trolling to go from one spot to the next, because Chaz and Steven talked about it, you're probably not going to see, you know, generally an increase in your catch rate.
Yeah.
But I would just say too, yeah, not having an understanding about speed and lure running depth is humongous. So let's say you do have that part in where you know where the muskies are at.
Yeah.
But then you're lacking understanding of lure running depth, then you're missing a big piece of the puzzle. Or vice versa, or if you understand how fast your lures or how deep your lures are running, but you're not fishing, you're not trolling in areas where there's a concentration of muskies, you're not going to whip. So I see those are the two biggest issues on my end that I see people make mistakes on.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's your biggest trick? What do you got?
My biggest trolling trick is very simple, and you and I talk about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Go slow. I'm a big fan personally. I troll in the fall. My biggest tip and secret, and I hate to give it away, but I mean, that's it. It's just go slow. I'm a big fan and a big believer of, you know, the half spool mentality.
Yeah.
Slow winds and cold water.
Absolutely.
How about
man?
You, man? How about you?
And the biggest mistake, you couldn't have said it better, is too fast and too deep.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. They get these guys buy these baits and they got a big old steep diving lip on them and they go, man, I can't catch them shallow, so I need to run this thing deep and fast.
Exactly.
So that's it. Don't, if that water's 65 degrees, I'm not going to run some bait 20 feet down.
Mm-hmm.
So don't go too deep, especially, I mean, the thing is this, muskies are looking forward and up. So going deep, you might, they're never going to respond to a bait that's too deep. But if you go over top of a muskie, if he's at 10 feet down and he's 48 inches long, it's two kicks of the tail for him to go up 6 feet. It's nothing, right? So don't go too deep and don't go too fast. You know, as you get dialed in, the biggest trick I give is this, is it's a hybrid technique I use quite often, is I will hybridize casting and trolling. And it's a great way to get started with suspending baits. So if a bait suspends like a suspending DR or other jerk baits, I will actually just use my trolling motor and go for it along a contour and work that thing like a jerk bait, but I never reel it in and I'll drag it around with the boat. So, you know, if you're looking for a way to sort of get dialed in, just have a suspending bait where you advance the boat forward with the trolling motor and the bait's still in the water and you just add the pops and twitches. So that's
some judo stuff, man. That's judo stuff right there.
That's what Booker told me is pretty black belt, but you know, that's probably my biggest trick there. Guys, me and Chaz have been, you know, thinking about this and talking about this. I hope this helps because we've had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of questions. Keep sending in your trolling questions. We can do another version of this and keep going, man.
We'll do another version of this where we dial in it in again based off user questions and what we talked about. That'd be a lot of fun, man.
And there's just so many facets, but we are like super long. Guys, we were going to have the craziest, most Pepsi-laden podcast next week. I promise. We'll do it. But Chaz, thank you so much. And guys, I hope this helps you out.
Always a pleasure, Stephen. Thanks for having me again and looking forward to talking soon, dude.
The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild. Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Booker Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.